Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good day to you, and welcome back. If you heard the first show this morning, we are live here. It is April 12th. I'm sorry. It is April 19th, 2021. April 19th, 2021. My name is Patrick Timpone. Dr. Carrie Mede will be here tomorrow, Tuesday, on the 20th. Dr. Glenn Swartout. He's a naturopathic fellow in Hawaii. He's really interesting. And he's going to be here on Wednesday. And we'll probably have one or two other people this week that we haven't firmed up as yet. Jennifer Daniels next week. Dr. Shiva is going to be here next week. And we have a whole lineup, actually, of next week that not at the tip of my fingertips at the moment, or the tip of my little mind. On the third Monday of each month, we're honored to have Dr. Ray Pete. He's been at this game of looking at health and healing for a very long time. Back in the late 1968, he started his work on hormones and did his dissertation in 72. He's taught in universities, wrote all kinds of papers, and is just a great researcher that we love talking to him. And we always have some good questions. If you have more questions than we have in, we try to get to them all. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Pete's up in the Northwest, where you say you're having a little heat wave up there, Doc.
Yeah, in the 80s.
Really? That's unusual for you guys?
Very unusual for this time of year.
Uh-huh. Are folks Oregonians or whatever? Are they walking around masking, socialing, and are they getting out, or what's the story up there?
Some of them are getting away from it. Now and then I see someone without a mask, but it's still official here.
It's still,
You can see people jogging with a mask on, no one else, within hundreds of feet.
Do you have any sense of it after all this time, Dr. Pete? We don't know what's going on, what this thing is, what it is and is. Wearing a mask is helping anybody about anything? What's your sense of that?
There's not really any evidence that it should or does. It could, of course, but that's a very weak basis for requiring millions of people.
Sure, sure. After all this time, do you have a sense of what's really going on here as far as virus, or for China, or man-made, or what do you think?
So far, I still haven't seen any real evidence of a pandemic, and there are lawyers around the world who are suing the governments to reveal the scientific basis for the lockdowns and the masks and all of that.
Yeah.
They're keeping it at secret if there is any real scientific basis.
Yeah, yeah.
Yesterday I saw that Michael Yeadon, the former Pfizer vice president, has made another statement, and he says it's the science behind it is so non-existent that he's accepting that there could be other motives. And he says, from what's known about the spike protein and the RNA so-called vaccines, that it's very probable that they could have long-range degenerative effects, breaking down organs over coming months and years, and that one of the possibilities is that it's intended to depopulate the world.
Yes, and this is a former Pfizer fellow that's saying this?
Vice president at Pfizer, and then he was co-founder of a biological company, which I think sold later for $225 million or something. So he's had a lot of experience in work relating to viruses and and vaccines.
Any of this talk from this Pfizer fellow on mainstream at all, have you seen, or is it just more alternative?
Naturally, they censor his videos, but I saw a long talk, the first one, and people tell me that he has released another video. But when you look him up, you find on Google about 20 headlines, Michael Yeadon, former Pfizer employee, fake news.
Fake stuff, yeah.
Putting out many derogatory remarks before you can actually find what he said.
We've heard this term spike protein with this injection. Can you explain to us what this is?
The workers at North Carolina in the virus department published several papers, a long series about 10 years ago, on how you can remove the nucleic acid section that describes specifically the protein that allows the virus to attach to human cell surfaces. So if you inject that into an animal virus, you can make it stick to a certain receptor on human cells. The current coronaviruses contain this adhesive protein, which in the process of making the virus stick to the surface of our cells, inactivates the protein that it sticks to. And that protein, ACE2 enzyme, angiotensin converting enzyme number 2, happens to be the degrading proteolytic enzyme that breaks down angiotensin 2, which is the promoter of high blood pressure, inflammation, degeneration, and all kinds of bad things in our body. ACE, the angiotensin converting enzyme, they found that if you block that, or if you block the actions of the angiotensin 2, short peptide, that you can relieve high blood pressure, and at the same time it happens to relieve nerve degeneration. They're trying it out in Alzheimer's disease, kidney disease, muscle wasting, age-related tissue deterioration, muscle shrinkage. Everything that aging and stress has been known to do, hypertension, cancer, and all of those things are promoted by angiotensin. And so if you block them, you get these very surprising therapeutic results. And very early, people found that these blood pressure drugs were therapeutic for the coronavirus-infected people. But the medical establishment said, well, that protein, ACE2 enzyme, is where the virus sticks. And so if you increase that enzyme, you're going to make yourself more susceptible to the attachment of the virus. It happens that if you don't have an abundance of that enzyme, you will have an overproduction, oversupply of the pro-inflammatory degenerative angiotensin peptide. Medical journals for a while were full of advocacy of promoting the blockage of this protected enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
But the facts turn out the other way, promoting the ACE2 enzyme turns out to be a radically important part of defense against infection and symptoms.
So then what are we conjecturing then that the folks that are concerned about this injection, this jab, that it's doing exactly then?
That it's causing our own bodies to start producing this horrible spike protein that knocks out our basic defensive anti-inflammatory system. That's the sort of thing that people like Michael Yeadon
are talking about.
It's leaving one of the most horrible possible proteins being produced by us adopting the RNA from the virus so that we become virus-like and produce our own toxic pro-inflammatory protein.
So that's the reason why there's so many arguments with the 10 pennies around and Kerry Mahdi is going to be in tomorrow and so many other people that there could be some really detrimental long-term effects of this thing.
And just out of thin air, people like Fauci say, that isn't how the cell works. The cell can't integrate that into our genes, can't keep producing it. Absolutely no evidence for that.
He just says it.
For 50 years we've known that our bodies have the reverse transcriptase that can integrate it right into our own genes permanently. And a group at Harvard MIT a few months ago, almost a year ago, published in vitro research showing that, in fact, human cells can and do incorporate the vaccine RNA section into the genes of the cell.
Hmm. So the CDC, Dr. Pete, they've got to know this, right? I mean, aren't these scientists? Don't they understand this?
If you look at history, going back 100 years of the U.S. Public Health Service and the CDC, they don't have a good record if you look at the actual unpublicized things they have done. Experimenting on children, going into Guatemala to test dangerous, infect orphans, for example, to experiment on. It's really just something like out of a horror movie, the actual history of the CDC.
Yeah. So we've had so many people talk about just vaccines in general over the last 18 months. And this idea that a vaccine, and I guess the live ones without the adjuvants are safer in theory, that they disrupt the innate immune system. So do you think that all vaccines do disrupt the innate immune system, the one, the kind of God-given immune system that we have?
To the extent that you overactivate the antibody-producing system, that's right. Sort of the most superficial, visible part of the immune system, that it really derives from the imaginary side chains that Paul Ehrlich invented to sell his drugs at the beginning of the 20th century. It's a doctrine that came from the chemical industry that turned into the basis of official government corporate description of how immunity works. If you have antibodies, supposedly you're immune. But meanwhile, actual science was showing that plants have learned immunity. you give them a trace, a vaccination, and you sensitize the system, and a few days later, that same trace amount that was harmless can become deadly because you've created an allergy. And that same thing happens in animals. A trace of something that is harmful but not deadly can activate an oversensitivity.
Yes.
That causes sickness. And the junk that goes along with any vaccine is a risk. It's where you create experimental allergies in experimental animals is to give them a little bit of extraneous material, wait 2 weeks, come back and give it again, and you've created an allergic animal.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the side effects of just about any vaccine.
Any vaccine. We've had...
And so allergies have been one of the fastest growing problems in the United States.
In our culture, just everywhere. And even in the animals, we've had natural docs on that have argued that all these little vaccines they give the animals too, some of them itch, you know, for a couple of years. I had one girl that itched for about 2 or 3 years before she got over it. Just couldn't stop it, you know, just itch, you know, just itch. Wow. So I guess in theory, from a real God perspective, anything that we would come in contact with, like the plant that you mentioned, wouldn't, if it doesn't kill us, and generally it's not going to, I guess, in general, we're gonna figure out how to deal with it? I
mean, all of the whole organism, all the different levels will adjust and toughen up. So there's not really any part of our organism that isn't involved in immunity and resistance. The ability to produce energy efficiently is really our most basic immune process.
And that's every cell, everything in our body, this life force that we embody, chi or spirit or God, whatever you call it, it's all involved in
resistance
and working with anything that's assaulting it.
Mm-hmm. Sustaining itself.
Sustaining itself. That's what it wants to do, right?
Yeah.
That's what it wants to do.
And there are two counterculture researchers, Polly Matzinger with the danger theory of immunity, and Jamie Cunliffe with the damage theory of immunity, that Cunliffe specifically says that our immune system isn't aimed at viruses and germs. It's aimed at restoring our own mechanism, maintaining the life process, and that when something damages the tissue, the body goes into a repair process, and that includes things like antibodies, that in the process of removing the damaged tissue and creating a repair integral tissue and organism, in that process, the antibodies will take away any bacteria or virus that happened to be involved in damaging the tissue. But the aim of the organism is self-sustaining and repair and maintenance, not trying to predict any future microorganism that might get into us.
So is this an argument for not to mess with these bodies as little as possible? In general?
In Africa, poverty and climate of a very humid, hot climate supports lots of possible parasites and mm-hmm. infections mm-hmm. combined with poverty has exposed the population to lots of challenges. When they were looking at the so-called AIDS epidemic in Africa, it turned out that almost everyone had the apparent AIDS or HIV exposure. But the really convincing explanation of that was that their immune systems had been overburdened and weakened. The self-maintaining and restoring processes had been weakened. Appearance of the extreme degree of infection with the HIV virus was really just a reflection of general tissue injury.
So they were weakened because of lack of nutrition.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A tough, just a way to live, whatever it be, I don't know, sanitation and things like that, and poverty.
Yeah. Yeah. Several big studies have experimented just adding a vitamin D supplement in some, and in others just a vitamin A supplement. Hmm. And either one of those has made a drastic difference in the background level of infection.
Interesting.
Far better than vaccine campaigns.
Wow. So then that's why so many people in Africa technically had the AIDS virus, and why they were given these drugs that many people argue is what killed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Peter Duisberg proposed that. He said that his experience with viruses, he was really the pioneer in a lot of virology mm-hmm. Ideas. He said he didn't see any way that the HIV could create immunodeficiency. And so the reaction was to stop granting him research support and to stop inviting him to conferences so he couldn't speak publicly.
Wow. Fascinating lives. So if you're back, 50 years ago and starting a family, would you vaccinate a kid for measles, mumps, rubella, and all that? What would you do?
No. When I was a kid, these issues were just like now. There was a counterculture. Mm-hmm. And in the 1940s and 50s, there were people warning about the dangers, warning about polio.
Yeah.
There are many publications all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century showing that injecting anything into the muscle, even vitamins injected intramuscularly, preceded the outbreaks of paralytic polio.
Preceded the outbreaks, right?
The injections.
The injections.
When they looked at the kids that came down with paralysis in, for example, in a particular leg or arm, it would turn out that had been the site of some kind of injection, vitamin injections or vaccinations.
Wow. And there's people out there arguing that the DDT played a role in this whole polio thing. Do you know anything about that?
DDT?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
He says.
It damages. It's an estrogenic substance. One of the things that the spike protein does, creating increased angiotensin. Angiotensin increases estrogen. It activates the aromatase enzyme, as well as the prostaglandin synthesis enzyme. Then prostaglandin, in turn, activates aromatase, starts a whole cascade towards producing more estrogen. angiotensin and estrogen symptoms turn out to be very parallel. And so DDT or the various plasticizers that are filling the environment now, these have strong estrogen-like effects. Mm-hmm. And so they overlap with the effects of the virus.
So all these poisons, maybe Roundup or any kind of poison, toxins, these are turning out to be really the chief culprits with what we call disease.
Weakening the restorative energetic system.
Weakening the restorative androgenic system?
Energetic.
Energetic system. Okay. Well, we were talking about Dr. Chi, the life force that weakens it.
Yeah.
Weakens it. Which is what happens when we eventually die, right? The life force gets so low that we just die, right?
That's what I've been writing about in my newsletters the last several months.
Oh, really?
What is it that causes us to gradually or more or less suddenly after about 70 or 80 years to...
To just die.
Start having a collapse of that restorative energy system.
Yeah.
Basically, I've been arguing that it's the accumulative effects of adapting to defective systems. So one of the things you can see in the environment is the altitude effect. When you're at low altitude, where most people live along the coast, the oxygen pressure is much, much higher than the developing embryo and fetus experience. And at the same time, that high oxygen tension at sea level drives out the CO2 that we produce, but that the gestating fetus can retain being enclosed in the uterus. The oxygen is much lower and the CO2 much, much higher. And that balance favors the fantastic development from one cell to this high metabolizing, big brained baby at birth with a metabolic rate two or three times higher than an older individual. So this extreme support for perfect development, preventing scarring. If there's a tissue injury during gestation, the high CO2, low oxygen tension prevents the formation of scar tissue. But once you get out in this excessively oxygenated environment, injuries tend to form scar tissue rather than good maintenance, complete repair. So where the highly energized, vital, young and resistant system produces tissue restoration without scarring, the weaker you are, the poorer your nutrition, or the more toxic exposures, the more likely you are to replace good tissue that's injured with more or less scar tissue.
Scar tissue, wow.
And aging consists of a shift from vital functioning cells to fibrotic inflammation, scar-like tissues.
But it doesn't seem like it's really a natural process, aging. I mean, aren't we kind of wired up to live happily and scar-free for a lot longer than we are doing as a culture?
I think one of the things that causes that is that our environment now has too much oxygen, not enough carbon dioxide.
How can we retain more carbon dioxide?
Moving to 8,000 feet. Leadville, Colorado, if you can adapt to it.
Wow.
The heart disease, cancer, and dementia rate, every 1,000 feet higher you live in altitude, the lower the cancer and heart disease.
Is that right? So just because more CO2 is retained. So
right.
When we exercise, how...
We're actually getting rid of CO2,
right?
If it's bad exercise.
Bad exercise. What would be good exercise, in your opinion?
Anything that raises your body temperature. It turns out that the good exercise that has prolonged effects is anything that raises your body temperature by muscle heat production. And they've compared exercise to just warming the body, and you get the same anti-inflammatory, heart disease effects, anti-cancer effects, and so on, just by getting your body temperature up, which good exercise does.
And in your opinion, good exercise is?
Heat-producing.
Heat-producing, which would be examples?
Muscle resistance exercise.
Lifting weights.
Lifting weights or walking.
Walking.
Or running in short bursts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the prolonged breathless kind of exercise where you become very hypocapnic,
yeah.
Very deficient in
yeah.
Carbon dioxide.
So if we can figure out how to exercise without and not breathing, or breathing normally, or not even breathing as much, then we're doing good, right? Because we're not getting rid of carbon dioxide.
Yeah, you're increasing carbon dioxide.
You're increasing, right?
And that decreases the inflammatory production of lactic acid.
And we can do that as our heart and our muscles and blood vessels get stronger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then we can retain more of that carbon dioxide.
Yeah, and the muscle adaptation to exercise increases the volume of the muscle and the ability of the muscle to produce protective steroid hormones rather than destructive estrogenic hormones.
Fascinating. So that's why so many of those people, remember early on, Doc, when the whole jogging thing was like the rage, right? And boy, these guys were dropping like flies, you know? They were, well, not like flies, but, you know, I guess yeah. The most famous guy was James Fix, and he was running, you know, 25 miles at a time. But don't those folks down in Africa, well, maybe they don't run for 25 miles, right? They probably just walk a lot.
In areas of northern Mexico, there are people who have to travel 20 or 30 miles a day, and they do it at a rate that they, besides it's at a high altitude, so the high altitude makes it possible to be more active once you're adapted and still retain your CO2.
We heard from Stephanie Seneff. She's got a new book out, Doc, on glyphosates, and she says that Mexico is going to be completely banning incoming and outgoing glyphosates in the next 2 or 3 years.
Very good.
Interesting, right? Wow.
Yeah.
We may need to move down there. You know, I just wanted to give a quick little heads up, because remember I told you that, I guess about 6 months ago, after talking to you, I thought, well, maybe I'll get a little bit of this thyroid thing from this place in Mexico that you plugged, you know, because I looked at TSA, I thought, well, maybe I need something. So I didn't, you know, didn't get it, and it showed up somewhere in Chicago. I got a letter from the FDA, and, you know, they said, you can't have it because whatever, you know. So I just thought it was God's way of saying I don't need it, and my thyroid's fine. But I just wanted to tell you it was kind of good news, because about a month ago, I got a phone call from these people in Mexico. What was the name of the place? Is Farmaco? What's one?
Farmacia del Nino.
Yeah, yeah. And they were very nice. And they said, well, we got your thyroid thing back, and would you like it, or would you like your money back? So I just want to throw that out there because they're a very reputable company. I mean, they didn't have to do that. I would have never known, right? So it's pretty good.
Quite a few people have sent them cash in an envelope and get their order.
So it seems like it is what's the name of a farmer? Say it again.
Farmacia del Nino.
Yeah, Farmacia del Nino, yeah.
MX, it is.
Yeah, so that's a reputable company at any rate. Doc, stay right there. Let's do a quick little break here, and then we'll get into some emails for Dr. Ray Pete, who's here on the third Wednesday, a third Monday of every month on OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's a great product if you've never tried it.
Previously with Daniel Vitalis, we were talking about, pine pollen.
Pollen is essentially the equivalent of what an animal would have as sperm. Pollen is like the male part, the semen, and it fertilizes the ovum of the flower, which becomes eventually a fruit. And so if we were going to draw the equivalence, it would be like that the flower is like the female sex organ and the pollen is like the male sexual ejaculate. Well, pine trees, which sort of just dominate so much of the landscape of North America and so much of the world, pine trees, they're semen. They dust the landscape in pollen. And that pollen, being the sort of male part of the plant, has some correspondences to male physiology in our species and many other animal species. So what I'm saying is pine pollen contains all of these different anabolic or androgenic hormones, plant versions of hormones that we need, like testosterone, like DHEA.
Well, the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees, good stuff, guys, and for you girls, too. Several choices of pine pollen, an Easter Thrival link, OneRadioNetwork.com.
And right along with that is another great company that we love. I just ordered some more of their products. I use a lot of both of these pine pollen. I love it. And also Shen Blossom. If you look on their website, go through One Radio Network, you'll see things like goji, schisandra, hoshuwu, turmeric formulas, velvet pearl, deer antler, wild purple reishi, wild premium grade ginseng extract, 50-year-old ginseng, medicinal mushroom formulas, goji berry formulas. Now, these folks are made exquisitely by Brandon Amalani. I mean, they're just the real deal, baby. They are the real deal. And he doesn't fool around with anything that's going to even come close to your body not liking, for they're all food-based, herb-based, mushroom, these kinds of things. The Max Planck Institute organization said many years ago that you don't want to put anything in your body unless it's from a real, once-living source. I think that's kind of true, but what do I know? It's Shen Blossom. It's a great product. They're all in Myron Glass on OneRadioNetwork.com. Shen Blossom, OneRadioNetwork.com. About a month ago, I purchased an air filter machine from our website. I clicked on just like you do. Yeah, I pay for them too. And it's really interesting. It's a wonderful unit. I think it's been 2 months now. And it's about, it's a little bit bigger than what would be a classic Dell computer, tower unit, a little bit thicker, a little bit taller, extremely quiet. It's all automatic. You can, cook a little bacon up there and all of a sudden the smoke will come up and, you know, the fumes from the bacon. And all of a sudden you'll hear your little air purifier maybe 20 feet away. It'll just crank up its fan and just work harder. Little bit until it gets all the smoke and everything out, and then it turns back to normal. It's got little lights on it. You don't have to do anything. So quiet. It'll tell you when you need to change the filters that are incredibly easy to filter, change. It gets rid of all kinds of stuff, 100% stuff of stuff that you just don't want, toxic chemicals, things in the air. Who knows? Since we've been opening the windows here because of the weather, every now and then I'll hear it just not cooking. It'll just kind of turn on for 5 minutes or so. Maybe there's something coming in from some pollen or something that thinks I shouldn't breathe. I don't have an issue, but, you know, maybe it's smarter than I am. I don't know. So it gets rid of it. Very clever, very interesting technology, extremely quiet. It's called the Air Doctor. It's on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. I think you'll enjoy it if you've been thinking about getting an air purifier in your home. Very, very well-constructed, classy unit. Just so pleased to be able to talk about them.
We are listener-supported. One Radio Network.
We're talking with Dr. Ray Peet. It is raypeet.com. You can get his newsletter, which is raypeetsnewsletter.com, right?
At Gmail.
At gmail.com, yeah. raypeetsnewsletter@gmail.com. And your latest one you've been talking about of why we die?
basically, that isn't the title, but looking at the process of adapting badly.
Adapting bad. And how great a factor do you think it is when people get to be around 60, 70, 80, or whatever, and start to think that they don't have much to live for, right? I don't know. It's got to be huge on the organism, isn't it?
Animal experiments show that isolation or the creation of hopelessness, the expectation that you don't have a future, that very process, simple isolation, turns on the pro-inflammatory processes, creates tissue inflammation, accelerating tissue degeneration.
Just the idea that, well, I don't have much going on, I don't know what I'm going to do, maybe I'll watch TV, it's just going to damage the tissues.
Turns down the energy system and raises the inflammation process.
Wow. Isn't that fascinating, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fascinating.
It's part of the adaptive process. If you don't intend to keep adapting to interesting, exciting stuff, then...
New stuff, right? Yeah. So if we're telling our body that we're not interested in adapting, we're just gonna, I don't know, go hide or something or escape. It's the body will get weaker.
It accommodates the process and turns down your interest and ability to keep adapting.
Huh. And then what would be the opposite end of that? Of some folks, and we've all been through it, I guess. We could go through a hypochondriac kind of stage of try to do so much stuff that could work in the opposite way too, right? Because we get afraid of stuff.
That's a part of the same process.
Same process.
Looking at the body as a machine rather than as a self with plans.
As a self with plans?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, you want to take some emails?
Okay,
here we go. Dr. Peet, many herbalists and naturopaths recommend the herb milk thistle for liver health and repair. I find online that it is estrogenic, so no surprise that it knocks down my libido each time I've used it. As an alternative, I started using NAC for liver protection. I know that cysteine is one of the amino acids that Dr. Peet cautions against getting too much of. So what does he recommend to protect the liver from, say, alcohol abuse or prescription drugs and living on planet Earth without affecting my libido?
In experiments with alcohol toxicity, alcohol exposure creates basically a fatty, scarred liver. The immediate antidote to alcohol poisoning of the liver or other tissues is fructose. there have been people saying fructose is poison like alcohol, but in fact it's the opposite. It's an antidote to alcohol poisoning. And so fat metabolism, doesn't produce as much carbon dioxide as sugar or starch metabolism. And so as long as you can keep oxidizing starch and sugar effectively, you're producing the protective carbon dioxide. And anything that makes you shift the balance away from oxidation and carbon dioxide is harmful. And too much reductive balance, if you look at the niacin-related metabolites, NADH and NAD, the healthy oxidizing cell has a higher ratio of NAD to the reduced NADH. But a lot of the whole 70 or 80 years of thinking about the dangers of oxidative peroxidation started with the realization that polyunsaturated fatty acids oxidize spontaneously and cause toxic effects. So this whole culture of fearing oxidation and wanting antioxidant processes or reductive processes have promoted the idea that things like reducing agents like cysteine or glutathione has been a big thing. Inject glutathione because it's so powerfully antioxidant. But in fact, the reductive stress turns out to be the real harm done even by what they thought was oxidative stress. Because when you fail to oxidize vigorously, the excess electrons find their way to iron atoms, for example, that had been harmless. The electron excess turns the iron into an oxidative destructive center. So the tendency to fail to oxidize turns on the process of random destructive oxidation. And substances like the flavonoids that you find in fruits and vegetables and milk, if the cow has been eating well, these bioflavonoids activate the cell's oxidative processes, even though they had been sold as reductants, antioxidants. Their effect on the cell is to increase oxidation of the good sort. And to consume electrons faster, and by that, to reduce the random destructive oxidation. And so if you just put in more cysteine or more glutathione, or even too much of vitamin C, the vitamin C that's effective and working in the cell is as a pro-oxidant. It's dehydroascorbate that works in the healthy cell. Cancer cells shift to a reduced form of all of these things, glutathione, cysteine, ascorbic acid itself rather than dehydroascorbate. So the healthy tissue is on the balance, a continuously slightly oxidizing process.
So that's why you've never been a big fan of just doing lots of vitamin C or any vitamin C, really.
No, you Linus Pauling pointed out that the gorillas, for example, who can't synthesize vitamin C the same as people, they, on their natural diet, are consuming about 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. All of the animals on a natural diet consume the equivalent of 3,000 or 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C just in ordinary foods, milk, meat, eggs, all of those things. If the animal was alive, it was producing its own vitamin C.
But it's out of food and not from like ascorbic acid.
If you put in too much ascorbic acid, you can run the risk. Same with intravenous injections of glutathione. Any strong excess of reductant in the bloodstream can create oxidative damage. For example, an experiment, a free radical chemist was testing the reagent grade purest available vitamin C, much higher standards than USP vitamin C. Put a gram of that in a liter of ultra distilled water, and found in an apparatus to measure free radicals that it was producing from the vitamin C and whatever trace minerals, metals were contaminating the highly purified vitamin C, that in distilled water, it was producing free radicals at the rate that a killing dose of X-rays would produce. Just the slightest trace of iron, for example, that was the particular metal that the free radical chemist identified reacting with the ascorbic acid. And in your body, when you have an excess of reduced vitamin C taken in, it finds copper and iron, and will that reacting couple will inevitably find some polyunsaturated fat to make rancid instantly. So the combination of a trace of iron or copper plus vitamin C plus fat creates extreme lipid peroxidation.
So is that an argument for maybe giving blood now and again to get rid of some of that excess iron if we have it?
That's one of the benefits.
To give some blood. So that's where the whole bloodletting thing at one point came from? Years ago?
It turns out to just people felt better after donating blood very often. They experimented on animals and found that old decrepit dogs, for example, could be rejuvenated by exchanging, taking the blood out, washing it, putting the red blood cells back in without the serum, and doing that repeatedly. Washing the blood removes a lot of their aged qualities. If you join the circulatory systems of an old rat and a young rat, the old rat's life is extended while the young rat goes through its lifespan.
Going back to the fructose, so that is that one of the reasons, Dr. Ray Peed, why you're such a fan of orange juice?
But the flavonoids are another.
And that's in milk, right? In the milk.
Orange juice and milk are very safe ways to get very high intake of the bioflavonoids.
Bioflavonoids. So where did all this stuff come about that we shouldn't be drinking milk over the years? I mean, wow, where did all that come from? Anti-milk stuff. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
My aunt was a nurse trained in the 1920s and 30s, and she was indoctrinated to not breastfeed her kids.
Really? Not breastfeed? Wow.
And that was a big medical thing, that there was some kind of a supposedly biological stigma against breastfeeding. So they were feeding them artificial milk, the idea of making milk out of seeds, almonds, soybeans, and so on, developed out of that of baby food culture. turning it over to industry rather than the mother.
You said, go ahead.
That developed, I think it has Freudian implications in the motivation that people are so fearful of milk.
You had mentioned earlier about well-fed cows. So are we just talking about grass-fed? Because if not grass-fed, you just don't know what they're eating?
Fresh grass has the most...
Yeah.
The highest content of flavonoids. Hay is fairly good, so dried grass still has lots of stuff. A highly grain-concentrated diet is the worst.
And you can actually, if you don't have a source locally, you could actually get, I've seen organic grass-fed milk at Whole Foods. I mean, you can actually buy it if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You can buy it if you want.
And the flavonoids are a great virtue.
Are in there. So that's another good argument to find grass-fed butter, like the ones we get from Ireland. Or some,
Even butter will contain these
flavonoids.
Flavonoids.
Ben wants to know, he's 71, Dr. Pete. He wants to know a best regime to increase low testosterone and gain more muscle. So he's 71, but he's not going anywhere. He wants more muscle and more testosterone. Your fave things?
Shift the diet away from fats to some extent. Increase the carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates?
Orange juice is first and best. But any carbohydrate is better than more fat.
Really? So many people say fats are so good for us, but talk about that a bit.
The saturated fats, going back to Hans Selye's experiments, in which the rapeseed oil was considered to be heart toxic, so they developed canola oil I think it was a erucic acid that was reduced. But Hans Selye showed that it was linoleic acid, which is still too high in canola oil. He showed that the high polyunsaturated fats were what were causing heart cell death. He would slice up the rat's heart after they had eaten a high PUFA diet and find dead heart cells all through the tissue. But then he fed them, besides the same amount, he didn't reduce the PUFA, but he added a lot of cocoa butter, which is very high in stearic acid. And just getting the highly saturated long-chain fat to balance and protect against the PUFA, he eliminated the heart death.
So... be good for us to have a little cocoa butter. You can actually buy that too.
I just got some of a deodorized. The odorous stuff sometimes can be very allergenic, so you want to test chocolate or
and that's cocoa just
butter.
Made. It's kind of white, isn't it, Doc? And it's just made from cacao. We're all chocolate, right?
If you have the unrefined cocoa butter, it's white, but it tastes like chocolate, so you can make a white chocolate.
And you can put those in your smoothies too, right? If you want to make fruit smoothies?
But it's important to check for allergenicity with even natural cocoa because the different ways that it's fermented and prepared can cause allergies.
So back on the muscles and the more, you say, more carbs, does that include the rice or pasta too for muscles or not? Are you just talking about more fruit?
Fruit is higher in the protective flavonoids.
Okay.
The grains are very low in them. But then the protein should be adequate. You don't want too much of the methyl donors, the age-promoting amino acids are mostly cysteine and methionine. So you want just a moderate amount of those. And then the type of muscle activity, like using dumbbells and squats, that just a few of those, like 10 repetitions of dumbbells and 10 squats or sit-ups will build muscle volume.
Mm-hmm. And then what about animal fats, pork fat or beef fat and things like that?
Beef fat is rich in stearic acid and monounsaturated, which are safe. Pork fat can go all the way up into the 30% linoleic acid, which is very age-promoting. But there's one pork farm in Maryland that has experimented feeding a good high-carbohydrate diet to their pigs, and they got their PUFA content all the way down to 4%.
Wow.
Where beef fat sometimes is as high as 3%. So their pork was very competitive with beef for safety and high stearic acid
Interesting.
Content.
So the pigs that are fed maybe GMO corn and other stuff could be a real issue, but if you find a farmer that's doing more vegetarian and more fruit and vegetables and stuff, they could it could just be fine for that's cool, man. So smoothies are good for us, right? Fruit smoothies?
Yeah, as long as you don't put raw seeds and nuts and
all that stuff. You don't need all that stuff. Right? What's the best thing we can do, writes Carol, for a system that is usually alkaline? Oh, I guess she's feeling she's too alkaline. Are vegetables okay?
Cooked vegetables are a way of getting your well-balanced carbohydrates, but proteins are the main thing that acidifies our system.
Mm-hmm.
So if your urine is slightly acidic, you're much less likely to get kidney stones than a high alkaline diet. So the people on a very a vegan or excessively vegetarian diet tend to get a lot of kidney stones because the material crystallizes and deposits at a higher pH.
I see. So our urine wants to be more in the 5-6 range.
Exercise producing carbon dioxide is one of the things that will help to keep your blood and urine slightly on the acidic side. Well, not acidic for the blood, but the less alkaline system, higher carbon dioxide, slight tendency towards hypercapnia is highly protective to all of your cells.
Mm-hmm. We're with Dr. Ray Peete. He's here on the third Monday of every month. You can go on our website and see all the different interviews. Fascinating, good material. RayPeete.com, his newsletter, RayPeete'sNewsletter at gmail.com. It's very affordable. You can email that email, and he'll set you up and get his newsletter. Here's an interesting question, Dr. Peete, from Ryan on this 19th day of April. My girlfriend's cycle has shortened to 3 weeks the last couple of months. Lots of unvaccinated women are apparently reporting this recently after their friends have got vaccinated. What? Could they be passing anything from the vaccine? Many coincidences, but a lot of people are talking about any scientific reasoning behind this.
People have been contacting me about that.
Yeah, and I've seen stories too. Now, is it possible these vaccine-injected people are shedding something to girls?
It's an obvious possibility. It hasn't been. People haven't done testing of swabs of their skin or condensing their exhaled breath and so on. But it's a very definite possibility that exactly that as the virus can be exhaled or put into the sweat and urine, mm-hmm. the vaccine RNA obviously can go the same route. And the spike protein, by knocking out ACE2 enzyme, increases angiotensin. Angiotensin increases aromatase and estrogen and prostaglandins. And estrogen and prostaglandins are deeply involved in regulating the menstrual cycle, creating PMS and dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea, changing of the length of the cycle, and so on.
And you have been contacted by ladies that are experiencing some shortened cycles?
Just recently.
So is it possible that people getting this injection could actually breathe out stuff we don't want or share it?
It's logically just as possible as with the viral material. It's our breath contains the most surprising assortment of chemicals, peptides, bits of nucleic acid, exactly the sort of thing that could carry virus-like fragments of RNA. You can even find isoprene in exhaled breath.
Well, this is crazy. Well, maybe we'll get to the point where all the unvaccinated people have some kind of a passport showing how healthy they are or something.
that's implied by people like Michael Yeadon.
Yeah. This could be where we're going. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be something if all ended up like that a few years from now? My goodness. Well, let's see. Hi, Dr. Pete. I know that you've mentioned Zach Bush in a past show. He makes a product called Ion Gut Health. The ingredients are aqueous humic substances. Do you think there could be any value in taking this?
No.
No?
Humic substances.
Just a
component of dirt.
Yeah.
Which it's probably harmless.
Yeah. Probably harmless, but so there's people have been arguing that actually if you had an organic garden, you don't necessarily have to wash the vegetables that well. Do you think that's true?
That's true.
Is it? You get a little bit of good stuff in there?
A little dirt is completely harmless.
Kids eat dirt all the time, right? My wife's recent CAT scan with no contrast showed a mild mucosal thickening on the right side of the sphenoid sinus. Should she be concerned? If so, what would you suggest from Henry?
Allergies will cause a thickening. Something you ate getting into the blood, the endotoxin from bad digestion will circulate through your body, causing sinus membranes, nasal membranes, lungs, everything to thicken up and have symptoms of inflammation, itching, burning, all of the inflammatory symptoms.
We're with Dr. Ray Pete. This is the 19th of April. Next week, Dr. Jennifer Daniels. There's a lady who's going to talk about the illusionary benefits of the fourth industrial revolution that is being promoted by the World Economic Forum. Also, Dr. Shiva, you've heard of him, Forrest Rivers, who's talking about how this is a great awakening. Just hold on, it's going to be okay. And Richard Mayberry is going to be here. So we have a full week for you next week. Here's an email. Is cultured butter a health asset? What about kefir?
Kefir is probably okay if it isn't very sour. If it has too much lactic acid, a large, like drinking a pint of it, can upset your liver and give you a headache. So you just have to be cautious with the quantity and the acid content.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really no benefit from culturing butter. They add strange industrial microorganism byproducts
to
change the flavor, I guess. But butter itself, just the pure fresh form that condenses when you shake up slightly sour milk. The milk, if it's naturally soured, has bacteria culture in it.
Do you think there's any, if you have raw, say, grass-fed milk, a goat or cow, that you can just leave it up on the counter in room temperature and let it do stuff? Does that make good things?
Yeah, that's the way we would make cottage cheese, for
cottage
example.
Cheese. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make butter, you can let it stand for a few hours and still have sweet butter. But the idea of buttermilk was because if you left it out for 8 or 10 hours, it would start growing a bacteria. The bacteria would fall in from the air, even if they didn't come from the cow.
Uh-huh.
And the souring milk would create a faster making of the butter.
Mm-hmm. Is goat milk close to being benefit as cow milk, similar?
And largely it's the diet.
That's a diet.
Goats prefer grazing on leaves and are more reluctant to eat stuff like a high grain-based mm-hmm. diet. And so their milk will have a lot more of the flavonoids than the average grain-fed mm-hmm. cow milk.
Do you think if you had a goat or a cow that was eating genetically modified or just glyphosate-laden food, which a lot of the corn and stuff is, that could be an issue?
Oh, for sure.
For sure. You don't want to do that, right?
No.
Okay. Mike wants to know, recent studies show the anti-inflammatory benefits of specialized pro-resolving mediators, SPMs, which are cell signaling subclass of omega-3 PUFAs. I know Dr. Pete's stance on PUFAs, but is there a place for using SPMs in managing inflammation?
A couple of researchers, one of them named SETI, S-E-T-H-I, traced the fate of DHA and EPA after they were ingested. And he found that by the time they reached the bloodstream, they were mostly oxidized and breaking down into other substances such as those, and that it's those oxidized products that are so immunosuppressive.
Mm.
And you can call immunosuppression an anti-inflammatory and a resolving a function. I think it's a dangerous way to resolve inflammation. I think of it as sort of analogous to the old treatment of arthritis with radioactive water. You can knock down inflammation with radiation. They used to treat acne with x-rays.
With x-rays?
you can temporarily reduce inflammation with high PUFA content or oxidized fragments, or you can create the oxidized fragments quickly with x-rays. But the long-range effect is that you had a destroyed face and head from the x-ray treatment.
So oxidation of the biomolecules, it's really, this is where disease begins, starts, this is the action?
Mm-hmm. It's a suppressive, energy-lowering process.
So all these poisons and chemicals and anything, this is what, one of the chief causes? Toxins of oxidation?
It slows down oxidative energy production and we compensate by increasing the glycolytic lactic acid processes that shift the whole organism towards degeneration.
The lactic acid, and that is tied in also sometimes to myocardial infarctions and heart stuff with too much lactic acid, right?
Shifts cells in that same direction, so it's a self-promoting degenerative mm-hmm. factor.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cowan, who talks about the over-lactation of the heart muscles especially, likes this herb from Brazil, Sulfanthus. Have you heard about that one? I don't know how to pronounce it properly. Do you know that?
No, what was the last one?
I'll have to get the proper name of it. But it's a climbing vine out of Brazil that cuts down...
Strophanthus?
Yeah, that's it. Sorry, I couldn't pronounce it. How do you pronounce it?
Strophanthus is the plant and strophanthin is the chemical, but it's also called the same substance. It's called wabane.
Wabane, yes.
And it's a steroid glycoside that we make. It's an intrinsic natural adrenal and brain steroid in ourselves. And so the right in aging metabolism, a slight, very, very small supplement of that can be therapeutic.
Yeah.
It's similar to digitalis.
Yes.
Digitalis has, for example, some anti-cancer effects, but our natural version of it is strophanthin or wabane.
Wabane, yeah. And yeah, he said he's been using it for many years with no ill effects and just a few drops, you know, maybe. That's interesting. Wow. And doesn't it do something with the pyruvate or in the body and actually turns the lactic acid into?
It stimulates our natural oxidative healthy processes.
Ah, pretty cool. That's great. What foods increase carbon dioxide? Sugar? Oranges?
Orange juice is a great...
the best one. Such an orange juice guy you are. Do you drink a lot of it?
Yeah.
Yes. No question there. I just drink a lot of orange juice.
In Mexico, where sweet oranges are cheap and easy to get, as fast as I could get them, I would juice them and always have lots of juice.
Wow. Does Dr. Pete have an opinion on the blood flow restriction training biohack to build muscles, which uses lactic bands? Oh, I've seen those. Which uses lactic bands that you put on your arms. People have always got these contraptions, Doc. They put your arms above your biceps or around your legs above the thighs, cuts down the blood flow, and as you exercise with those relatively low weights, a lot of reps and several sets, the body responds by producing a lot of lactic acid as though you were exercising with massive weights. And so you kind of get the drift of this. What do you think about that?
Yeah, injuring the muscle will make it grow, but that's the extent of it. You're still hurting the whole organism.
So what you're doing is you're actually damaging the muscle, and might make it bigger, but it's for the whole organism, not good.
They've looked at the mitochondria of old people, which are much less efficient than young people's mitochondria, and then they had them do only concentric exercise, only contraction against resistance, no extension of the muscle under force. And with just a few weeks of exercise, they had created new young-like mitochondria in these old people. And it's the eccentric exercise, like walking or running downhill or letting a weight down rather than lifting it. The extending the muscle, stretching the muscle under resistance. That's the eccentric muscle damaging kind of activity that causes the most muscle growth. So if you want big muscles, but not necessarily such good health. You can do eccentric muscle tearing exercises.
That's tearing, right, when you do...
microscopic right. Tearing damage.
You know, Doc, I've been doing some really deep stretching, a lot of it, the last 3 months, and my legs and body never felt stronger, my muscles. And that's just what it's doing, right? If you're stretching, right? If you're stretching?
It's mostly the activation of the muscle.
The activation of the muscle. But there's no resistance to it. I'm just really stretching.
you don't want to force elongation of the muscle against resistance.
Right. That would be counterproductive that way. Here's Dana for Dr. P. Dana, she has a doctor. She has no thyroid. And since a person with no thyroid has to take a full replacement dose, which can be vary by person, I suppose, what does he see as a probable, the minimum of taking Sinoplus and how to best take it? He has said the body would naturally produce or could use 3 to 4 milligrams per hour. If you take more than that per hour, is it going to end up in reverse T3? It is hard to be on a one-hour schedule with thyroid medication all day, every day.
You can usually get by taking it with a meal. The meal will delay the absorption, so it's more or less natural in the way it's absorbed by the cells. A little bit with each meal. And the overall total amount that you need, animal studies as well as human, show that in a northern climate where you have winter weather and summer weather, the requirement for thyroid can be 4 times as high during the winter.
Wow, four times.
I found year after year that where I needed only a half a grain of Armour thyroid, which would be a fourth of a tablet of Sinoplus, I would need 2 whole grains of Armour or 1 whole tablet of Sinoplus during the winter months. Animals pretty much are the same. And so you have to be alert to changing according not only to the season, but to your activity level and diet. When I have to do yard work in warm weather, I stop taking thyroid for a day or so so that I can be more physically active and not produce too much heat.
Interesting. Rose has been hypo for over 30 years on Synthroid the whole time. She says, I've had numerous medical things happening in my body, but I have no idea of who I could contact or get a holistic doctor. Does Ray Pete have any ideas of where I can start here? Because I'm confused.
Mary Shulman years ago had a good international list, but now they don't have the patient comments anymore that helped you guide yourself to which doctor you wanted. If you ask around enough, you might be able to find a doctor who recognizes that women in particular tend to have problems because estrogen interferes with the conversion of thyroxine to the active hormone T3. Women always are more dependent on the actual preformed T3 and very often get an anti-thyroid effect from over-accumulating the pure thyroxine, because the liver is our main source of conversion to the active hormone, and estrogen... The average woman will have a sluggish liver for the conversion or for detoxifying alcohol, for example. Hmm. So women get drunk more easily, usually, than men because of the estrogen slowdown of the liver. And if a person is depending on the liver as their main source of T3, if they have had a thyroid gland removed, then their liver becomes the main source of T3, and it just can't do the work. Supplementing selenium or having seafood every week, the selenium allows our peripheral tissues to convert some of the T4 to T3. But if you have that problem of not proper reaction to the T4, then you simply need to have a product that supplements some T3.
Mm-hmm. Gloria says, oh, this is interesting, my dog has several lipomas, and my natural vet suggested it's really a function of the liver. I heard Dr. Pete a little while ago talk about liver function and more fructose. What kind of fructose could I give my dog? I mean, yeah, what could you do with your doggies in more liver health?
Dogs like fruit.
Do they?
We had a Cocker Spaniel that when the cherry tree had low-hanging cherries,
she
would up on her hind leg to graze on the cherries.
So would you do, like, just cut pieces of apple and things like that for your dog and see if they like them?
Applesauce, for example.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Sort of more digestible.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. Vince says, this sounds counterintuitive, but please explain how sugar could actually help reverse type 2 diabetes.
I have articles on my website about two doctors in France and England in late 19th century who cured type 1 diabetes, the most deadly quick-acting wasting disease, by letting them eat all the sugar they craved, and within just two or three weeks stopping the stress of inability to use glucose by letting them eat huge amounts of sugar, cured them, let their pancreas recover. Sugar supports the survival and the formation of pancreatic beta cells. So it has been used curatively for type 1. And type 2 diabetes, it's usually the accumulation of large amounts of anti-metabolic PUFA in the body. So if you just try to increase your sugar consumption, you're going to be adding calories to a system which is simply metabolically slow. You've got to first repair the metabolic process that has accumulated over years, usually with overweight fat tissue that contains a lot of unsaturated fats. Every time you get hungry, you pull free fatty acids into your bloodstream that turn off your ability to oxidize sugar. And so in that kind of diabetes, the problem is to get your metabolism going again, and you can't just correct the problem by flooding the system with more carbohydrate.
Interesting. Mary says she's 70, and she says it seems the past few months I get several episodes of facial flushing and feeling of heat and can feel my ears turn red. Can Dr. Pete have any suggestions? What could be going on?
The same as with hot flashes, they can happen to men or women or young women.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime your metabolism is disturbed, your blood sugar falling, just a brief dip in your blood sugar will turn on things like nitric oxide production, causing vasodilation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so experimenters have cured nocturnal hot flushes, night sweats, by having them drink a cup of a starch solution, or eating a big cup of rice or ice cream or some carbohydrate at bedtime. Just keeping your blood sugar up can momentarily stop the hot flashes. But the basic problem is getting your energy system efficient, making sure your thyroid and vitamin D and calcium intake are adequate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Doc, I've been drinking lots of orange juice, thanks to you and my friend Adam Bergstrom. And sometimes if I do my fasting blood sugar in the morning, it's dead on 80, 85. So, you know, it's not making me blood sugar crazy or anything. And there's a lot of sugar in orange juice, isn't there?
But also potassium.
Potassium. Balances out, huh?
The potassium itself mm-hmm. fills in for insulin.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's worth it to go ahead and get the organic oranges and juice them yourself, or get the pasteurized? Do you think it's worth the effort? Difference for the body, in your opinion?
I was trying it for a while, but it was very hard to find organic oranges consistently sweet. Sweetness is the overriding thing. You don't want sour orange juice every morning.
Not good. But you drink it throughout the day. I'm kind of getting the idea. I don't know.
All day, intermittently.
All day.
But it has to be reasonably sweet.
Yeah. And it's hard to find just really good organic orange. When is the real season for oranges in Florida? Is it in the winter or the summer?
In a climate like that, I think you have three orange seasons.
Uh-huh. Do you think there's any concern with the non-organic oranges of taking up chemicals, glyphosates, and stuff?
Oranges that you're suspicious of, just not only wash them, but don't get around the peeling. But with organic oranges, you can make marmalade of the peeling.
You make it. Well, Doc, thanks so much for your for being here every month. We just really, we enjoy it. And what's your latest newsletter on?
It's going to be on the same subject, the bad adaptive processes that we're exposed to constantly, mm-hmm. promoting aging,
mm-hmm.
How it relates to inflammation and how to resist the pro-inflammatory forces.
So I guess there could be a good argument, we make it through all this silliness going on in the world with whatever, that we're all going to be stronger, right, on the other end? We adapt?
The survivors, yeah.
The survivors. Good. Well, I hope you're one of them. We hope you stick around as long as you like. Sir, thanks a lot. It's an honor, and we love you and your work. And it's raypete.com, his newsletter, raypete'snewsletter@gmail.com. Thanks a lot, sir. We'll see you. Okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye. An honor. Yeah, man. It's great, huh? So great we get a chance to talk to all these people. I learned so much. Yeah, folks, if you haven't really had a lot of drink of some orange juice, I don't know about you, but I just love it. I've just been drinking a lot of it. And middle of the night, juicing oranges, in the morning, it's really, I don't know, I do really well with it. Not sure you will, but it's worth playing around with. And, you know, you don't have to juice your own. You can get organic pasteurized oranges at the hippie food store. You know, it's be fine. I guess we're just going to go now, and we'll see you tomorrow. Dr. Carrie Made, and she's a feisty girl, So we're going to talk a lot about what's going on in the world of injectable medical devices, what's going on in the world of censorship, medical tyranny, if you will. I don't know how we've even lasted this long, but we still post a few things on Faceplant. And we're going to go ahead and stream some more of what Mike Lindell is doing. He launched his a stream. He's a cool guy. He launched his stream on, what's the name of it? FrankSpeech.com. We ran some this morning, and I think we're going to run some more now. And you're going to have a chance to get on this Frank stream. And evidently, they're going to do things like YouTube kind of things and videos and also a social media thing. And there'll be millions. And he is suing Dominion Software for $1.6 billion. Pretty serious about it. He hired... Who did he hire? Alan Dershowitz. One of the top First Amendment free speech attorneys in the world, really. And Lindell, even though he was, bringing out all this material on against Dominion for in support of President Trump and this coup d'etat that he believed happened, he's not, it's just not going to be this, some conservative platform and all for the right wing and all that. He wants everybody to join, and it's just about free speech and just to have a conversation about ideas, and it's about free speech and not about left or right. And it's going to be great. I think we're going to, all of us should move more into embracing everybody that disagrees with the left right thing. That's a trap. Free speech is what it's about, and that's really what we're up against with the Googles and the YouTubes and the Faceplant and Twitters and Instagram and all those places. This is what they're about. It's not about, it's just, they have an agenda, and if you're opposite their agenda, baby, well, they'll just poof you off. So we'll explore it. We may get on there and do some stuff. We'll see what it's all about. And I don't see it running right now. They may have already hacked him. They hacked him all weekend. But he had about 10 million people that were watching this morning. So he's the fellow, the MyPillow guy, MyPillow.com, that they sued him. They said that he lied about the material that he put out there. But he said, no, I got proof of it. It's, Chinese commies. They were just stealing votes, and they stole a kabillion of them the night of in November in 2020. So, we'll just stay in touch with you. We'll see you tomorrow. I love you all very much. Love you. Thank you. And we'll see you at 10 o'clock tomorrow. May the blessings be.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.